All right, this is Mae Bressel back with you talking about justice now, as I mentioned in the first part of the program. I want to just keep up with a few of the cases of counterintelligence and another important so-called suicide in the hands of the police this week, a case that's important for my research. Another article, which was long overdue, was Jack Anderson's article that I referred to last week on the relationship of the Central Intelligence Agency to Jonestown. That case has hardly been opened. The surface hasn't been scratched. Larry Layton is going to be brought to San Francisco to face trial for the murder of Leo Ryan, of killing a congressman, and for assisting in murders at the airport. It'll be an interesting trial. See what happens. The first thought of defense was that he was brainwashed. An aide to the lawyer said they may use this as one of the examples of his defense, being as 900 people killed themselves for Jim Jones, they were all under some kind of brainwash, and therefore when he went to the airport and intended to bomb the airplane that everybody was on, he was still under the suicidal influence of people who killed themselves. On the other hand, if you can prove that only maybe 200 people intended to kill themselves and the others were outright murdered at Jonestown and were under experimentations of mind control that were beyond Jim Jones, then that represents a different kind of defense. Joe Holsinger, the aide to Leo Ryan, Congressman Leo Ryan, was with me this week and we went over some information and I gave him those copies of Time and Newsweek, December the 4th, 1978. At the time that your best friend and long associate is slain and you're enveloped in such a terrible tragedy, it's hard to analyze what came down right at that moment. And I illustrated and circled the cover and the inside pages of Time and Newsweek that the people there on the floor by the vat and poison and on the grounds and in the dining hall had markers on them, not all of them. Some people had a marker on their left leg, some on a right leg, some on an arm. And that these were plastic kind of markers that are used for experimentations of people where they're given medications and they change colors. And Mr. Holsinger wasn't aware of that, but a woman who was with him perked up right away. She said, "That's right. We were told that when people went in there before the Guyanese army cleaned out, before they identified, before they turned them over, when Time and Newsweek and the other news media came in to take the pictures, the people were lying exactly as they were. They were face down, so the marker didn't mean anything, or everybody would have a right wrist. By the time these people were removed in bags, they were 4 days in the hot sun with maggots and blisters, and you couldn't tell black from white. They were so decomposed, and yet they were perfect condition when the media was allowed to see them, and they had these markers." So I gave him a lot of information on mind control of the Central Intelligence Agency and the Defense Department working on the people down there, including Jim Jones. So if Larry Layton was a victim of mind control, it wasn't that Jim Jones did it to him on his own. He wasn't a self-styled Rasputin who ran the machinery. The machinery came from the Defense Department and from Boston and Los Angeles and Stanford Research, UCLA School, and Stanford Research and Boston Hospital. And the question is, why were these people or other people in the hands of Mr. Burnham down in Guyana allowed to be experimented upon away from home? Later, in a few weeks, I'll cover an article for you on the politics and destabilization of Guyana, a wonderful article in Covert Action Information Bulletin. But for those of you who take the tape cassettes or those of you who want a printed bibliography of the broadcast this evening or other evenings, you can write to me. And I have the address of the magazine that you can get, Covert Action, a long story of the politics of Guyana from 1960 to 1980. You have to study that article to get the destabilization process that was going on with Mr. Taylor and Alan Dulles and the Central Intelligence Agency in Great Britain from 1960, and Jim Jones was there in 1963 on the way home from Brazil, where he worked with the CIA for a year and a half, and then he was sent down there later. He knew exactly where he would be 10 years later. In 1973, he was sent down with these people, and he had visited the place in 1963. One thing about the Covert Action article, which has been published in other stories or taken from there, that I do want to correct for you, in the article it has a list of certain facts about Jonestown, cash that was found there, U.S. criminals on probation or parole, the use of the MK Ultra program of the United States government, and so forth. But then, just as a non sequitur, it said in the article, Leo Ryan's name appears in Who's Who in the CIA by Julius Mader. Now, whether or not Ryan had worked with the CIA or not, just as William Sullivan worked for the FBI or William Harvey for the CIA or Sheffield Edwards or Dorothy Hunt, the CIA is notorious in killing its own. So whether he was in the CIA or not had nothing to do with the destabilization of Guyana. But the point is that they have made a mistake in this covert action, and I'm sending them a letter this week to tell them. Leo Ryan is the one that was slain down in Guyana is Leo Joseph Ryan, and he was born May the 5th, 1925. That's his birth date. The Leo Ryan that they have in Who's Who in the CIA was a totally different Ryan. The one that was killed was in submarine service in the Navy. The one in Who's Who in the CIA is in the Army. They're different birth dates, different locations, different employments. There, I don't doubt that there isn't a Leo John Ryan that worked for the Central Intelligence Agency that was born in 1923. But the point is, it isn't Leo Joseph Ryan who was killed down in Guyana. So in the last few weeks, Jack Anderson has talked about the CIA and Jonestown. He's talked about Carlos working and protected by the CIA, and he's talked getting into Paul Exalt and the Hughes organization, their racism, their doubt whether Hughes was alive. I'm very interested in Anderson doing these things because those of you that know me know that I've been carrying on these stories for as long as the very first news came out about them and pursuing these stories. And what we need is more action of people in the media, such as Jack Anderson, to call attention to the fact that these conspiracies do exist and that they should be investigated. A man that's running Ronald Reagan's campaign, such as Paul Exalt, who's taking money from a corporation that wanted him in the White House, when we have this wonderful 9-to-5 president coming up, would wonder if Paul Exalt won't be there, as I say, to represent their wishes. Last week, I talked about various violences that came down. I talked about the Munich Olympic Games, not Munich Olympic Games, the Oktoberfest, I'm sorry, where there were 12 people that were killed and 144 were wounded. And the first article came, there were articles that came out, one said, one man blamed for the explosion. Neo-Nazi group suspected in blast that killed 12. Another article, no suspects found in Munich bombing. Well, the articles went on until they had a rightist suspect who was apprehended, and then the suspects were freed in the Munich bombing. And the last that we were heard was that the rightist suspects were freed. There were more than one suspect. And then the final is one man blamed in Munich blast. And they pinned it on one student, Gondolf Kohler, a Nazi, and blamed him for 12 deaths and 144 injuries. And then the Oktoberfest, I read, went on very successfully, just as the Olympic Games went on when the athletes were murdered. So that they had a suspect. He was killed. They had other suspects. They were released. And they now say that only one person will be blamed. That is the way the other team that set up the violence, where 144 people were hurt, are able to leave town. I talked about the script for the Somoza killing, how he was in trouble with the government down there for his womanizing, for the mistress he was had selected. He was an embarrassment to Stroessner down there because he was supposed to low-key it after he left his home in Nicaragua. And also, it would be a chance to pin his murder on the leftist organization, say it was a defunct group from Argentina, and go through Argentina and Paraguay and bring in hundreds of suspects, which they have done, and round it up, and then send the funeral to Miami. At the time, the next 2 days, Reagan was going to be in Miami campaigning with the anti-Castro Cubans. When you have a man who's unpopular, who's notorious, as this person is, and unwanted, it's just as convenient to murder him right then at the time of elections. And because of the way he's killed and completely ripped apart, the sympathy is with that man and not what he did to over 100,000 people that he himself had murdered when he was in power. Well, this week there was an article in the Associated Press hunt for Somoza killers plagued by questions, a police frame-up, question mark. And the essence of the article was, or is, that in private conversations, they're blaming the United States Central Intelligence Agency for the murder of Somoza, that they identified one man, Hugo Alfredo Irizon. The officials claimed that he plotted the assassination. He was shot to death, and now there's a question of whether or not it was the body. The parents, who saw him in 1973, haven't seen him for a long time, and they were not allowed to see the body. So the police, again, had a group of six they were looking for. They went in and took a typical Lee Harvey Oswald, who was reading a book on Karl Marx I mentioned before. But when I mentioned last week, I didn't have the article. It came out October the 3rd that in Paraguay, they're talking about the fact that the CIA killed Somoza. I'm sure they did, and I'm sure my reasons were right. Another article, Paraguay opposition leader is arrested. Police arrested opposition leader Domingo Leono, and they confiscated documents and personal papers, and he's held incommunicado. In other words, anybody who's against Stroessner and the Nazi dictatorship that's in power can be rounded up on the whipped-up emotions following the Somoza killing. So sure enough, this week they were blaming the CIA, and sure enough, they were going out and rounding up the opposition to Stroessner, the little bit that's left. I also mentioned last week on the tape that it was open hunting season for blacks. I talked about the killings in Utah and in Buffalo, and the jogger shot at Salt Lake City, snipers in San Francisco. And right after that, in the news this week, following my broadcast with you last week, there was an article on the shooting of Verdon Jordan linked to other killings. And it goes into a mystery man. He's described as a mystery man. They don't know his income, and he's from Alabama. And he's wanted for similarities in many murders with weapons. They know he has an alias. And he uses that alias. He traveled to Cincinnati, where he killed two black youths. He shot two black joggers in Utah, Salt Lake City. And the white women that they were jogging with survived. He killed four black people in Buffalo. He's wanted in five states and suspected of shooting and trying to kill Verdon Jordan of the Urban League, the president of the Urban League. The important thing about this case, again, they're looking for Joseph Paul Franklin. He had a high-powered scope. He left in one car. He was in the police department, just as Carlos and these other terrorists are, and he was allowed to leave. He left out the window. He escaped in Florence, Indiana, even though he was wanted for these killings. I told you the news story calls them random. Now they have narrowed them down that they're not random. That's what I said last week. They are specifically black people. One article, this was October the 3rd, in the paper, still calls it random killings. Victims apparently were picked at random in at least six shootings. All of them were black. The targets were black men. In four instances, they were shooting in the company of white women, and in several cases, white women had died. He had a high-powered rifle, six cases of ammunition and so forth in his car, was in the police department in Indiana where he had done shootings, and he's at large. The police, in quote, let him escape. Another example of the courts just not functioning, typical to Nazi Germany and typical the way these crimes are solved. Another case that I've wanted to go into with you for a long time is the Strangler story. We'll get to that eventually. The link of Los Angeles Strangler to the public officials in Los Angeles, the use of prostitutes, snuff murder movies. This Bianchi has been arrested. He was arrested in Bellingham, Washington, not in Los Angeles, even though he and his cousin worked with the Los Angeles Police Department, this Bianchi. He had a woman who was visiting him in the jail quite often, and then she left Los Angeles, and Angelo Buono, B-U-O-N-O, is also under indictment for these Hillside Strangler murders. This woman was visiting Bianchi in the jail in Los Angeles, and usually they keep a pretty tight record of visiting these people. Then she went up to Bellingham, Washington, and disguised herself as an actress from Dallas, Texas, and took a woman at a hotel and strangled her. The woman almost died. And she was strangling a woman named Kim Breed in Bellingham, Washington. a county employee. Again, they worked heavily with county employees. And her purpose was to leave directives that the real strangler is still at large, that Bianchi couldn't be the strangler because the pattern was going on. And she got her instructions and was in the jail learning his technique of strangling in the Los Angeles jail so that she could murder people up in Washington. And then he would be released because they would believe the murderer was at large. This is a man that worked with law enforcement people in Los Angeles and had strong links, as I say, to police officials and law enforcement officials in Los Angeles. And it's similar to the case I brought up last week of the Zodiac killer, of a member of the San Francisco Police Department writing Zodiac notes or impersonating the Zodiac killer. The mass violences like the Zodiac killings or the Hillside Stranglers or the Son of Sam cases are so far more complicated than the average person knows about. And again, that goes into the category of terror and counterintelligence. Now, there's one other article that I'll conclude with. I may have a few more. I'll have time to bring up. But this is a subject which is close to me that goes into the category of, call it speculation or what you will, or hearsay. I'll give you the article, and then I'll give you my opinions on it. This article is out of Brazil this week, October the 4th. That was yesterday. Ex-Nazi officer commits suicide. Now, this is a man, again, who's been in the custody of the police department, who dies. Some escape from the police. Some are killed in the police department. The man's name is Gustav Franz Wagner. You know Wagner, well-known name in Germany. He was living in São Paulo, Brazil. He was in the custody of the police department because at the time of the celebration of Hitler's birthday 2 years ago, he was photographed. Wagner lived in Germany until 1950. He moved down to Brazil using his own name. He was responsible for at least 250,000 deaths of Jews and Poles at Sobibor extermination camp. He worked there in Poland in 1942-43 at the extermination camps. After the war, he lived comfortably in Europe. In 1950, he went down to Brazil. Every year, there's a large German colony. They're all over South America, Uruguay, Paraguay, Brazil, Chile, Argentina, but particularly in Brazil, there's an annual birthday party for Adolf Hitler in April. And it was at this birthday party, the newspaper article describes, this is the story, that he was identified from a newspaper photograph taken at a birthday anniversary party for Hitler near Rio de Janeiro. Wagner turned himself in after federal police said that they wanted him in connection with the extradition. The police didn't want him. I remember that birthday party because there's a lot of people that have never taken seriously the possibility, I'm not saying it's true, the possibility that Adolf Hitler left the bunker and was flown out of Germany and took the U-2 boat down to Argentina and Antarctica. From doing radio work for being on the air 9 years, and doing research for 17 years into this aspect, I get into the iffy where people say you can't prove that Hitler is alive, but there are many books about the possible escape and the story of Hitler's leaving Europe. And there are many stories about this famous birthday party that takes place. There are other birthday celebrations in Europe in April, Hitler's birthday parties in absentia, anniversaries. But I have heard, and from what I read about Nazi documents, that Hitler is at these parties. And this Wagner, somebody took a picture of a group of people at a gate. I think I have it among my papers from 1978, April 78. And Wagner realized that he was recognized. The Brazilian, somebody right away let out that Wagner was seen there, this man that had run those concentration camps. And he went to the Brazil police for security. He said, "Protect me." And he went to them. They didn't pull him up. There's no country that would extradite him to Europe all this time. And I think that's interesting. Israel legally couldn't do it because they weren't a country when he committed the crimes. France wouldn't do it because it wasn't their problem. Poland said, "We don't want him. We're behind the Iron Curtain, so we don't have the jurisdiction to bring him here." It's not the same Polish government it was when he did it. West Germany didn't want him. And the only one reason, I think, that they didn't want him, because they had him, and he was in the custody of the police, could be the company that he kept at that party. Now, a man who had been in Argentine and had studied the life of Adolf Hitler, he's working with somebody who was making a movie on Adolf Hitler, had said that Hitler, I saw this man about a year ago when we were talking about Hitler, had said that Hitler left Brazil because of Wagner being recognized and whatever would follow after that, or maybe he would use it as his defense. This is what I was told, and that Hitler never returned to Argentina or Antarctica. He had a complicated Berchtesgaden built down in Antarctica with all the comforts that he needed, and there's many, many people living in Antarctica. And he never returned there. This is what I was told, that he was taken to a sanitarium in Switzerland. Now, time will tell. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. Maybe we'll never know if, in fact, age 90, Adolf Hitler is alive. I usually don't use my radio time for speculation, but the story of this man dying in the custody of the police department, held there for 2 years and dying in the custody of the police department, is interesting because he had a home, a nice home in Brazil, as many of the Germans do. He wasn't charged with any crime. The police didn't arrest him. They were protecting him from being extradited. And it goes on to say that the reason he was hospitalized was that he was depressed when he was discovered. When they began to recognize him in Brazil and he began to remember his experiences during World War II, he got depressed. Well, you better believe he got depressed. Just remembering the experiences may be that he thought he'd be sent back, and maybe his defense. He said, and it's in this article this week about his death, that he said, "I only obeyed orders, I only obeyed orders." It'd be interesting if the man who was giving the orders to him was at his party. That would be a good defense. And the article begins, "Gustav Franz Wagner, who said he, in quotes, only obeyed orders, committed suicide this last Friday at his isolated farm in Sao Paulo State." And then it goes on that he said, "I knew what went on in the concentration camps. I only obeyed orders." That was the defense at Nuremberg, the famous defense. Well, Wagner is now dead. Simon Wiesenthal didn't want him. I don't like to break illusions. There are many people that put Simon Wiesenthal, the Nazi hunter, on a grand pedestal. He found Adolf Eichmann. There's people like Farrago that claim that the agreement was between the South American countries and the other Nazis. Simon, you can have Eichmann. Go try him in Israel and give him the full sentence. That will leave us with Martin Bormann and Mengeles and Wagner and all the others, the top Nazis. Hundreds and thousands of them were able to assemble and meet and unite and become politically active throughout the entire world. And I don't know anything about the background of Wiesenthal. I've talked to him personally on the telephone. He has never been interested in apprehending or bringing back a Nazi. Really interested, this article says that Wiesenthal recognized Wagner by a picture, and the police were protecting him. That wasn't the way it went down in 1978 in April. I remember when Wagner was identified, and it wasn't by Wiesenthal. And in the past 2 years, I've never heard him give one speech about Wagner down there in Brazil. He went to the White House and got an accolade from Jimmy Carter. He collects 17,000-20,000 ribbons for getting Eichmann. And he's let the other biggies slip in and out of the United States and work with our Air Force, with our defense industries, people like Walter Dornberger and Skorzeny, setting up our terrorist teams, anti-terrorist teams. And I could go on and on for the big story Nazis that got away, even possibly Himmler, who was supposed to be in New York City, a journalist in New York City. This is a tragedy that the Jewish people have sat back. And when I bring up the subject of these Nazis and how they have surfaced and how important they are in our political scene today, and they all worked with the Hughes Empire and Paul Exalt and the Reagan gang. That's what the legacy is going to come out in 5 or 6 weeks when the election is over. Then you're really going to see things pop a la techniques of Adolf Hitler. The legacy is there. And whenever I bring up a subject about Wagner or Mengele's or Martin Bormann, the answer is, well, wouldn't Wiesenthal get them? The answer is no, he wouldn't, and he didn't, and he's remained very passive I think I mentioned once before on a radio program that Charles Hyman was writing the book, The Search, The Nazi Connections to Errol Flynn, and was in Germany and asked Wiesenthal for the name of a doctor that he wanted to see. And Wiesenthal gave him the runaround and said he was out of town and wasn't available. So Mr. Hyman picked up the phone and looked in a telephone directory. He thought Wiesenthal would have the number because it was a Nazi spy during the war, admitted Nazi spy who bragged about it and was apprehended and was written up in FBI documents. And just by chance, Hyman looked at a phone directory to see a name or family name, and there was the man's name. And he picked up the phone and called him and talked to him himself. And Wiesenthal had told him, he didn't say, get it yourself, or here's the number, look in the phone book. He said he's out of the country, and tried to divert him or discourage him from seeing him. And that's the way the story goes. One more minute on justice being perverted. There are two members of Congress, John Murphy, an important man from Staten Island, New York, and Frank Thompson of Trenton, New Jersey. Two of the most important members of the House have been indicted in the Abscam connections, one linking the London casino and organized crime to New Jersey and the casinos there, and John Murphy being on the board of directors of the Paul Levy Foundation, the classmate of Somoza, and so forth. These two men have asked that their trials be put off till after the election. They want to be elected to the House of Representatives on November the 5th, 1980, before they are charged as criminals or bagmen or linked to the mob or taking pay under the table and photographed and so forth. The court has been nice enough to say you can be elected first and win your constituency, and with that vote of confidence, maybe we won't prosecute you. Just this last week, one woman was slain in her car in Washington, D.C., a radio woman slain broadcasting on the air, and she was part of a group of the International Year of the Child. That was a U.S. commission, and that commission was linked up to organized crime, to Rosalind Carter, to the Vatican, the Gambino family, narcotics traffic. It's interesting. This woman was a graduate of Smith College, president of her class. She worked in New York and San Francisco and was working in the media for the International Year of the Child that was perverted by the crime syndicate and gun running and narcotics traffic so that the Year of the Child really didn't get off. And I wonder if her murder didn't have to do with something that she picked up about the connections of the mobsters to the front of the International Year of the Child that was used for subterfuge and more dangerous occupations such as gun running and narcotics. Well, we covered a lot of material this week. I'm glad that Anderson is coming out with these things. As you read the newspapers every week, if you're new to the Mae Brussel type of broadcasting, save your articles on murders, trials, escapes, suicides, and put them away a few years and get them out again, because we'll analyze them continuously, and then maybe you'll be able to recognize counterintelligence and terror that is directed against us as citizens by the very intelligence agencies that are hired to protect us. The FBI, the CIA, Army intelligence are not supposed to be in the subterfuge or the police departments, and they let these people escape, leave the offices to go on to do more murders. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. You take care. And I'll be back with you again next week.